Now, here's a bit of an American classic.
They let you dream just to watch them shatter. You're just a step on the boss man's ladder, but you got dreams he'll never take away. On the same boat with a lot of your friends, waiting for the day your ship will come in and the tide's gonna turn and it's all gonna roll your way. Working 9 to 5.
Yes, it's 9 to 5 by legendary country musician and actor Dolly Parton. Parton's been a fixture in American country and pop culture for decades, and her image has evolved over the years. For many people, she's been a feminist icon, even if she doesn't use the term herself. In her new book, our next guest takes a look at the life of Dolly Parton, her music, and the working women who saw themselves in her songs. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're a Dolly Parton fan, going way back or just recently, what does she mean to you? How has she represented women in her music? What songs by Dolly Parton stick with you, say something to you? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Sarah Smarsh is a journalist and author. Her new book is She Come By It Natural, Dolly Parton and the Women Who Lived Her Songs. Sarah, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, Rob, it's good to be with you.
Well, I think recently there's been this, you know, in recent years, this explosion of interest and affection for Dolly Parton, just sort of generically, yeah, she's pretty cool. In her book, you really dig into what made her what she is today. And a lot of that is the messages she had for working women, for low income women. Can you talk about how that's at the heart of her work and why she speaks to her fans?
Sure. So as you said, Dolly is certainly having a moment, and this for a woman who has been in the music industry for half a century at this point. It's rare and interesting to see kind of living legend receive this new regard and a kind of reconsideration of what she represents. And I think part of that is understanding the complexity and layers under her physical presentation and the persona that everyone knows and perhaps sometimes glossed over as somehow superficial or over the top. And one component of that, one of those layers that is incredibly important to me as a daughter of the rural working class, is her roots, where she comes from, and her affinity and abiding love for her place and her class and people. That's a class and people that broader society and certainly the successful circles in which she now resides would encourage her to feel ashamed of. And she has instead always come full circle to her home through her storytelling, through the way that she continues to present herself as a product of her place, and just the vernacular, her form of speech, even the clothes that she chooses to wear. You know, I say sometimes she's a smart woman with a lot of money. She could have classed herself up a long time ago. And I find that her decision not to is a little bit of a statement, maybe a covert one that was missed by folks who were distracted by her physicality in the earlier decades of her career.
We'll dig more into that, but I want to meet another key character in your book. This is a personal book for you, and in part, it's because of your grandma Betty, who I think at age, when you were 11, took you to see Dolly Parton. Talk about Dolly Parton through the eyes of Grandma Betty.
Sure. Well, Dolly Parton and my grandmother are almost precise contemporaries. So my grandma was born just a few months apart from Dolly, and they were born into quite similar circumstances. My grandmother in poverty in Kansas, so a different region geographically, but there were certainly parallels. They also were both, frankly, blonde women who met sort of standards of beauty for their time and therefore received a particular sort of attention that sometimes was positive, but also sometimes was degrading. And this was at a moment and in decades when the women's movement of the 1970s hadn't happened yet. And there were very few policy-based protections for women in poverty, women of any class, certainly. But for a woman in a rural space and with very few economic resources, there was a vulnerability that could be dangerous and even deadly. Dolly Parton writes about that in her early songs, many of which are dark Appalachian melodies that bear witness to the plight of poor rural women. Dolly herself escaped a lot of those fates, be they domestic violence or unsupported pregnancies and so on. My grandmother, Betty, did not. She lived a lot of the songs that Dolly Parton wrote. And I saw the connection that she felt with Dolly Parton, the songwriter, in those moments when we were, you know, rolling down a two-lane highway. My grandma puts a tape in the tape deck in the 1980s, and Dolly Parton sings. My grandmother would sometimes cry, and this is in the context of, you know, frankly, not a very emotive or expressive culture. I was born into the rural German Catholic Midwestern farming community that is, there are just a lot of layers of sort of you are stoic and you don't complain and you certainly don't shed a tear for your own misfortunes. And yet when Dolly Parton sang of those misfortunes, I saw that my grandma Betty experienced a sense of validation that I knew even as a child was extremely rare in popular culture. Country music was really the only place that I saw women like my grandma afforded any real dignity.
That's another point you make right off the bat. Country music is one of the few genres that I think people will just dismiss completely out of hand. You say maybe sometimes people will do it with rap as well. You talk about how, especially for women, country music is like the only part of pop culture sometimes that speaks to their lives.
Absolutely. And, you know, I couldn't have articulated this as a kid, but now as a member of the media industry and someone who writes books and has a hand in, you know, and has the privilege of helping shape the sorts of narratives that follow national discourse, I see now the absolute dearth of stories and voices who have any direct connection to the place that I come from. So country music, and probably not coincidentally, because it is dignifying the voices of specifically poor rural women, often more specifically poor rural white women. But at any rate, it is a demographic that has precious few ambassadors in society and culture, and perhaps for that reason, because it does the work of dignifying that space that is often vilified or negatively stereotyped in broader terms, it is dismissed out of hand as a silly art form, when in fact it can be and often is, and certainly in Dolly Parton's case, a very sophisticated genre.
Talking to Sarah Smarsh, her new book is She Come By It Natural, Dolly Parton and the Women Who Lived Her Songs. You can join in at 800-642-1234 if you are a fan, old or new, of Dolly Parton. Or if you have a question for our guest, 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Sarah, you talk a lot about women at this time and from this background working in a man's world, whether that's Grandma Betty, I think, working at a law firm with some very, I think, sexist lawyers, or Dolly Parton coming into the country music industry, the very male-dominated industry. Can you talk a little bit about Dolly Parton's experience in the early days in that world?
Sure. So I was born in 1980, which is the same year that song you played, introducing the segment, Nine to Five, came out that same year as did the blockbuster movie of the same name. And so in many ways, I'm kind of the daughter of the Nine to Five generation, the woman who put on the shoulder pads and the high heels, and they entered the workforce in new ways and in new spaces, in large part due to Title IX legislation in the late 1970s that afforded them more protections for their gender in professional capacity. And my grandmother was one of those women. She started as what at the time they would have called secretary at the courthouse in downtown Wichita. She'd make these long drives from out in the country for this job, which was the first one she'd ever held that didn't require just backbreaking manual labor, which was what she was born into. She kind of worked herself up the ladder so far as she could without a college degree, and ended up as a bailiff and a probation officer under a county judge. And so for me, witnessing her enter that space where indeed she was surrounded by more privileged people, attorneys, as you mentioned, people who didn't have direct experience of poverty. All the same, she had sort of entered a world where, in theory at least, while she certainly faced sexual discrimination and harassment, she had an opportunity to make a decent and livable wage on her wits and her skills. She had spent most of her life, you know, waiting tables in diners and working in factories. And at that same moment, there were myriad parallels for women across the country. And for Dolly Parton, that moment happened to coincide with her, just the moment when she was coming into her own as a solo artist. So she had spent much of the 70s as the co-star to a huge country music star named Porter Wagoner on a show that bore his name. And yet she often kind of outshone him as a star. She was a better writer, a better singer, and soon the audience loved her more than they loved him. And so when she struck out on her own in the late 70s, it was just building up to that moment when women would have more opportunity than they had previously. And it was just like perfect timing and Kairos with her own brilliance and genius available to offer the songwriting and the voice that in previous decades might not have been heard.
We're talking to Sarah Smarsh right now. Her new book is She Come By It Natural, Dolly Parton and the Women Who Lived Her Songs. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you see Dolly Parton's role in popular culture? Do you have a favorite song you'd like to share, a story maybe about seeing Dolly Parton perform live? Call 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time.
She has so many faces. She wears so many names. She goes so many places and she does so many things.
You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. That's Working Girl by Dolly Parton. We're talking to Sarah Smarsh, author of the book She Come By It Natural, Dolly Parton and the Women Who Lived Her Songs. Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Ben is with us in Watertown. Ben, hi.
Yeah, hi. How are you?
Good. What'd you want to bring up, Ben?
Well, I'm a big fan, and I really like Jolene. I do remember, though, sometimes you see these old Johnny Carson shows on TV channels, and she's a guest on there, and they're obviously making fun of, in a kind of a snide way, of her sexuality, and she really seemed to move beyond that. I just wondered how she did that, and beyond being considered kind of a sex symbol, or I don't know how to phrase it delicately, but you know what mm-hmm. I mean.
Yeah, Ben, thanks for the call. And Sarah, you tell just cringe-inducing stories of Dolly Parton on Johnny Carson, Barbara Walters, Oprah Winfrey, and more. We could spend a lot of time talking about this, but what do you have to say to Ben?
Well, thanks, Ben, for the question and the comment. It's absolutely apt, and it's at the heart of why I ever even wrote this book, which is in those interviews that you might see replayed from earlier decades of her career where otherwise famously dignified interviewers such as Johnny Carson even himself lowers himself to a sort of sly belittling of her by way of, you know, making a comment like, I'd love to see under your blouse and that sort of thing. And my hope with this book is to kind of talk about all the things that those interviewers weren't asking her about and should have been. As for how she navigated that particularly sexist treatment, there are a couple of ways, and there's some a radical nature to it, I think, certainly for her generation. One is that she didn't cover herself up and attempt to, you know, downplay her femininity or sexuality. In fact, she went quite in the opposite direction. She understood that she was being turned into a sexual object, and she embraced it in a sense by wearing low-cut clothes and sort of making jokes about the size of her breasts that before a male interviewer could do the same. And then simultaneously with that, she just kept putting out incredible work. Occasionally it was a memorable role in a movie, but far more often it involved her songwriting and performing. And the just absolutely obvious genius in her work forced people then to reconcile the stereotypes that they had about a woman who looked like her, which is that she must be, you know, a dumb blonde, quote unquote, force them to reconcile those sorts of stereotypes with the deeper, very meaningful layers of who she was underneath all of that. So it was, in many ways, what today we would call a gender performance, decades before there was any consideration of that idea in the mainstream.
Thanks a lot for that call. We heard in Dave from Middleton, who says he'd like to hear what the guest has to say about Dolly Parton's efforts to promote literacy and books for kids. And Sarah, I'll say my wife works in the library world. I said, yeah, doing an interview about his book about Dolly Parton. And she's like, yeah, Dolly Parton's a legend in the library world for her work on this. And you write about a lot of Dolly Parton's philanthropy over the years. Can you talk about that?
Yes, I'm happy to speak to this, particularly as a book person myself, obviously. Dolly Parton is famously generous and philanthropic in all sorts of ways. Most notably in recent headlines, she gave $1 million to Vanderbilt University for development of a COVID-19 treatment, which resulted in the Moderna vaccine in part that will, you know, do no less than save the world, I guess. So Dolly Parton has her hands in that. But her number one cause for many decades has been literacy, and specifically by way of children. The reason is she was raised by a father who was extremely brilliant, but also illiterate, just for lack of schooling or opportunity to learn to read and write. And she founded an organization called the Imagination Library, which for decades now has given to any family who applies one free book per month from birth to age 5 for young children around the world. And I believe that they recently crossed the notable milestone of 150 million books given away, incredibly enough. And so that's a cause that is near and dear to her heart. And that endears her to me all the more as someone who cares very much about books and coming from a poor rural space knows the transformative power that they hold.
Talking to Sarah Smarsh, her new book is She Come By It Natural, Dolly Parton and the Women Who Lived Her Songs. Back to your calls now. Russ is with us in Stoughton. Russ, hi.
Hi. Amazing coincidence that you're doing Dolly Parton today. Just last night, well, early this morning, WPR plugs into the BBC broadcasting for late night, and they did a segment on Dolly Parton. I didn't get in at the beginning. I think they might have been interviewing Lily Tomlin. It sounded like her, but I never heard that. But one fact that came out is that Dolly Parton wrote the song 9 to 5 on the set between rehearsals. That was not an original part of the movie to be included, but it did get included because she wrote it and it became so popular.
Russ, thanks a lot for the call. Well, that's, I think, a good excuse, Sarah, to talk about Dolly Parton as an amazing musician and obviously songwriter. We could, again, talk for a long time just about this, but share your thoughts on Dolly Parton, musician.
Sure. Well, she thinks of herself, to the caller's point, she thinks of herself as a songwriter first in terms of her kind of creative engine. Her performing and all the rest come second. And she's quite prolific. She has written over 3,000 songs over the decades. Many of those have been covered by all sorts of famous musicians from, you know, Whitney Houston and onward. But as far as her writing that song for 9 to 5, I think, is a perfect springboard for examining this particular creative genius of Dolly Parton, because Lily Tomlin might have been telling the BBC, as Jane Fonda, their other co-star on 9 to 5, has also told the story in documentaries of you know, Dolly Parton taking her long acrylic fingernails and using them, you know, kind of scratching them up against one another for a sort of washboard effect. And that's that sound that you hear that's sort of typewriter-esque at the beginning of 9 to 5. She used that sound to, and, you know, she's tapping into that sense of connecting with a typewriter for the working women represented in that film. And this song just then kind of flowed out of her. And Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin both talk about having been struck by, you know, she runs it past them and they say, you know, they got goosebumps just realizing how she had done that off the cuff and sensing that it was going to be a big hit. And of course, it remains a big hit today, I think, probably one of the most recognizable songs from the 20th century.
Well, Sarah, we'll leave it there for now. Thank you so much for joining us. This flew right past.
Thanks, Rob.
We've been talking to Sarah Smarsh, journalist and author. We've been talking about her latest book. It's called She Come By It Natural, Dolly Parton and the Women Who Lived Her Songs. Well, if you have a Dolly Parton memory to share, favorite song you want to tell us about, you can tweet us at Central Time WPR or send us an email. It's ideas@WPR.org. If you're a Dolly Parton fan of long standing or a recent convert. Again, email ideas@WPR.org or tweet us @CentralTimeWPR.